Yeah, it was actually a really good show. I mean, I did really well at it. I got another one in April at Traders Village. Has a big Comic-Con coming up. So
is it good because you sold a lot or because you found a lot of good stuff?
I sold a lot.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I made a good bit of money that weekend. So
nice.
They had about 200 people show up.
I didn't make any money that weekend, but I didn't lose a lot because we went to Rodeo Cook-Off.
Yeah.
So
I kind of missed it a little bit this year because back when I was a wheel in the oil field, you can imagine that. At vendors that I'd get armbands for 50 armbands on my arm going around different tents.
Absolutely.
But I haven't done it in years.
Well, we do it. It's kind of tradition now. Like, we get a hotel downtown, and then we ride the train, so we don't have to worry about driving. And train drops you off right at the door.
Right.
And you go on in. But, like, every year, you know, you have to beg, borrow, and steal wristbands from, you know, not in an aggressive way, but just ask people.
Yeah.
See what
get
you
them where
get.
You can.
And as it's gotten more popular over the years, it's like the wristbands have gotten a little bit more scarce.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're even if they're going to give you one, you're always met with that, well, I've got one for Friday night and I got one for Saturday. You're like, come on, you're not giving them out in anything but pairs.
Right. Yeah, you know that.
Who's going to go walk around by themselves at Cook-Off? But for those of you who are not familiar with the city of Houston, we have the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, which is, I guess, the biggest livestock show in the world.
Yeah.
Every year. And every year, the week before the livestock show opens, they have a chili cook-off. And so if you've ever watched National League football, you know, the NFL, and you see the Reliant Stadium, it's also the parking lot where the Astrodome is.
Right.
And if you look at an aerial view and you see pretty much that entire parking lot is a big chunk of it is used for a giant carnival. And then the other half or the other three quarters, it's all tents. It's a big tent city that's built.
Yeah.
That and each of these tents has a cooking team that competes, and it's the chili cook-off, but it's actually a barbecue cook-off.
Mm-hmm.
So you got different people competing with, you know, brisket and ribs and chili
and chef's choice and all kinds of stuff
like that. And they actually compete. You have cooking teams, and they're all sponsored by either beer or liquor for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, oil companies, or whoever wants to put their name up there.
Right.
But if you get wristbands, you get passes to these different tents, and all of them are separate.
And they're decked out with bars. Some of them have DJs and bands. It's basically this little nightclub set up all over the parking lot.
Right. And you get to go in, and you get to sample all of this award-winning barbecue and food from all kinds of different recipes and stuff.
And lots of alcohol.
And every tent has a beer or liquor sponsor. So you're walking in and it's all open bar. And it's all 100% free. The food is free. The booze is free. And so my wife and I go every year to this thing and tear it up. And but one thing that was different this year than previous years is one of the VIP tents, or one of not the VIP, but one of the most sought after tents to get into is the Jack Daniel's tent. It is it's really, really hard to get passes the Jack Daniel's tent. And even if you have passes, it's first come, first serve, and they capacity out real fast. And there's a line to get into this tent all night. They have some of the best food, and then of course it's free whiskey.
Right.
Well, my father-in-law, who is a big Jack Daniel's consumer, you know, I'm a big Jack Daniel's consumer, but nowhere near to the status to scale he is. He set me up. He volunteered me to be what's called a Tennessee Squire, and Tennessee Squire program is like a Jack Daniel's, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like fan club or community club or community organization. But it's really, really cool. It's just this kind of like VIP Jack Daniel's thing that they do. And I've only been part of it for a couple of 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't even know what all it entails, other than since I've been a part of it, I've got like 100 new friends on Facebook, and I'm getting offers for free arts and crafts and holsters and whiskey bottles and like just all kinds of really cool stuff. But if you have that Squire card, then you're VIP and you skip the line and you go into the Jack Daniels tent. So we got to go into the Jack Daniels tent and sample their food, and it was, oh my God, it was awesome. So good. So if you get a chance to become a Tennessee Squire, hit me up in that VIP room of the Jack Daniels tent.
It just sounds like you should be wearing, you know, leggings and...
I'm serious. I'm going to grow a little mustache.
Get one of those wigs.
Uh-huh. Anyway, we're not talking about chili or cook-off tonight. We're episode 73 of Scary Dad Podcast, in which we're actually going to talk about sea monsters.
Louisiana, we might make a gumbo with one.
Yeah, true. You know, we're not too far from Louisiana. We chop stuff up and throw it in a pot just as good as anybody. But we are landing here on March the 5th of 2018.
Yep.
And so, without further ado, we're going to get into what we might call old business. And if you remember last week, we talked about how the church said that Galileo's heliocentric model was not allowed to be taught or defended anymore, right? Because obviously, Earth is the center of the universe. On this date in 1616, so a week later, 1616, Copernicus's book on the revolutions of the heavenly spheres is added to the Index of Forbidden Books. There's something about things spinning around in the sky that just bug preachers.
Grind their gears.
All right. This date in 1766, speaking of Louisiana, Antonio de Ulloa is the best way I can say it. The first Spanish governor of Louisiana arrives in New Orleans.
Okay.
Unfortunately, somewhat topical to what's been going on in the world, on this date in 1770, the Boston Massacre. 5 Americans, including Crispus Attucks, are fatally shot by British troops in an event that would contribute to the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War, also known as the American War of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
Those British troops were telling them that they needed to turn in their guns. And they said no, so then they all got shot. 1836. Samuel Colt patents the first production model revolver, the .34 caliber.
You're staying on topic right now, aren't you?
Dude, you know, you pull a list. This date in 1933, Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party receives 43.9% at the Reichstag elections, which allows the Nazis to later pass the Enabling Act and establish a dictatorship. Once again, that whole, like, no, I don't want to get into it. But what if?
Right. Right. You got to look at that.
And I promise I didn't plan this. Just go to Wikipedia and pull the date. On this date in 1940, 6 high-ranking members of the Soviet Politburo, including Joseph Stalin, sign an order for the execution of 25,700 Polish intelligentsia, including 14,700 Polish POWs, in what will be known as the Katyn Massacre.
That is insane, man. Just think about those numbers for a second. This is five figures.
14,000, almost 15,000 folks. Well, POWs, 26,000.
That's the population of some small towns.
Mm-hmm. On this date in 1963, country music singer Patsy Cline died in a plane crash in Camden, Tennessee.
Speaking of the rodeo, Garth Brooks is playing tonight.
Is he?
Yeah.
Those tickets were expensive.
I was thinking about how awesome it would have been to, because, you know, the news was there live, so interviewing people, and the drunks and everything that are running around. And I just wanted one to run up and say, "Hey, achy breaky heart, hope he plays it tonight."
You know, it's funny.
I would have done it on purpose, of course, if I would have been there.
It's funny, in kind of my old age, I've mellowed out a bit on just... There is, you know, like, when I was a teenager, there was all that, you know, the difference between bands that are true to themselves and who's sold out, and then, you know, it always bugged me, like, country music singers, like, don't even write their own songs, man. They don't even feel those emotions. That's bullshit. And, you know, just... But then, I honestly hear my dad's voice in my own being like, you know, this sucks. Because really, all I'm listening to these days, and I shit you not, is like 80s, like thrash metal, and like old school country. Because if I flip the station and it's something new, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Is it music?
This sucks. I'm just thinking of myself as like a 42-year-old Beavis. It sucks.
One of the people they interviewed, it reminded me of a last episode with Michael Bolton. They were like, can you pick your favorite Garth Brooks song? And they were like, oh, there's just so many, I can just pick one.
Right. Actually, I saw a really cool video not too long ago. My wife was playing around on Facebook, and she's like, dude, watch this. And so Garth Brooks is on stage somewhere, and he's playing a song, and there's some dude, like, kind of near the side by the pit, and he's got a sign that said, you're the reason I play guitar. So Garth, like, stops the song, or he doesn't start playing the new song, and he kind of walks over to the side of the stage, and he's like, what kind of guitar do you play? And the guy's like, a Takamine. And Garth's like, he's like, that's cool. He's like, now, he's like, I just want to point something out. He's like, you've played a guitar. He unslings the guitar he's wearing. He goes, but you've never actually played a guitar. And like gives him his guitar off his...
Come on.
And this dude's just standing there just like... Because you know, whatever instrument Garth Brooks happens to be playing is not only top of the line.
Oh, it's custom.
But it's custom. And it comes with probably $500,000 of endorsements behind it.
Right.
And he's just like, here you go. So this dude is just like absolutely in tears. So then Garth's like, hey, the next song I'm playing is this one. Play it, because it's still connected. It's still hooked up to the wireless. So the dude starts strumming it, and he starts singing it, and like the whole crowd's just like, oh my God, this is awesome. I'm like, that's pretty freaking rad. All I ever got was a pick.
Drumstick in the eye. But, you know, I've never seen a bad thing about Garth Brooks, and from everything I can tell, he looks like he's a nice, down-to-earth,
just a cool nice guy,
you know?
But that is pretty neat. I mean... All right, let's see. When I went through this, notable births were a little bit lacking. There wasn't a whole lot of very... Well, there's a lot of people that were born on this date, but not a lot of people that were... that we would really know. In fact, as I'm scrolling the list, I'm like, damn, where's all my highlights? But so happy birthday, 1955, Penn Jillette.
Oh, nice, I like him.
I do too.
I used to love the show Bullshit on Showtime.
They're really good. 1958, Andy Gibb. Still think of the Justin Timberlake Jimmy Fallon thing where they're doing the Gibb brothers and they're all Okay, 1970, John Frusciante of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And that does it for notable births. Notable deaths on this date in 1953, Joseph Stalin went straight to hell. 1982, John Belushi rode that dragon into the sunset. Poor John, man.
Yeah, he was extraordinary.
And that really does it for old business.
Okay.
So, we'll take a quick break. We will come back with the new business.
Yes, sir.
All right.
A creature alive today has survived millions of years of evolution. It lives to kill. a mindless eating machine that will attack and devour anything. One terrified you like nothing you have ever experienced when it captured your imagination and tapped your fear like no movie before it. Then, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, two continued the legend and spread the fear. Next summer, nature's most terrifying creature takes on an all-new dimension in an all-new adventure. And for the first time, the terror of Jaws will not stop at the edge of the screen. Jaws 3D, the third dimension, is terror.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. Okay, to start off with, know the name Lamar Chambers? Probably doesn't ring a bell, but it should. Because off mic, Billy and I have been talking about Lamar Chambers for a couple of weeks now. He is the guy that is refusing to poop for the police in Essex.
Is he still not pooped?
He still has not pooped, dude. It is on day 40.
Oh, wow.
And it's at a point now where I'm like,
he's going to get sepsis.
I got to talk about this now. We can go ahead and bring up good old Lamar. Okay, so suspected gangster accused of swallowing drugs is now at risk of death after refusing to go to the toilet for almost 40 days. Suspected drug deal, he swallowed the drugs while he was being chased by police in Essex, England, and has since rejected laxatives and an x-ray, but has continued to eat and drink and hold his poo. It gets even more just weird. Essex police officers have been tweeting daily updates of the operation they describe as Poo Watch since the man was arrested in Harlow on the 17th of January. He's been charged with two counts of possessing Class A drugs with intent to supply. The police are actually saying they don't need him to poop it out. They don't need the evidence. They already know. But they just want him to go ahead and get it out. Police say they will continue to apply to court for custody extensions until he empties his bowels or allows doctors to retrieve the package he is suspected of swallowing.
Jeez.
What I really would love is if
he poops and there's nothing in there.
No, people don't realize that he's friends with a trustee and he like pooped 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And everything's already gone. They just threw it in a bag and cleaned out the cell real quick and nobody noticed. So they're just still sitting around waiting, checking the toilet, waiting for him to poop. That's what I really hope is going on right now. He's got a friend that's helping him out. Yeah, so they're still waiting for Lamar to poop.
Some men are born heroes.
What I love is the previous record. Apparently this has happened before. The previous record was 33 days.
He's blown
it out of the water at this point, dude. It's the only thing he's blowing out the water at this point. Yeah, so yeah. Good luck, Mr. Chambers. Okay, as of the release of this episode, in a few days, you will be able to watch The Strangers Pray at Night, the highly anticipated sequel to the original Strangers. I'm looking forward to it. I love The Strangers. I thought it's one of the scariest movies. That's the kind of movie that'll give me nightmares.
Yeah,
because that shit could really happen.
I can't really handle that. I need to like make sure everything's locked and loaded. And if there's a knock on the door, I'm like, nope.
And according to the synopsis in the film, family's road trip takes a dangerous turn when they arrive at a secluded mobile home park to stay with some relatives and find it mysteriously deserted. Under the cover of darkness, three masked psychopaths pay them a visit to test the family's every limit as they struggle to survive. And like the original movie, you never saw who the people were. You'd only assume from what you saw that it was kids that were actually doing it. It's just that movie psychologically really fucks with you, bro.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this one.
I've seen that thing once, and I don't want to back to it.
This is one of the scariest movies that I've seen. You know, it's not gory. It's just frightening.
Right.
Okay, and one last thing. We were just from the Scary Dad podcast. Like to wish Kevin Smith a speedy recovery. So you heard about him.
Of course.
Suffered a massive heart attack during a show, actually, the stand-up show that he was doing. 100% blockage of his LAD artery, which is also known as the Widowmaker. He says that if he hadn't canceled show number two to go to the hospital, he probably would have died.
Yes, I read that whole thing that he wrote, and it was in his way just like eloquent and beautiful. And you know, you kind of hope that everybody, and everybody doesn't, but you kind of hope that everybody has that same lease on life. Like, you know, his thing was, I don't want to go, I got so much more to do. But if I go, you know, I've had great parents, I've had a great career, I've got a loving wife and an awesome kid, and I've had a good run, you know. And that was something that, you know, most people don't, you know, even if they have it, they don't acknowledge it or really realize it.
Right.
So, you know, take a time to take a look around and don't let near death kind of make you see it that right. way. You know what I mean?
But we love Kevin Smith. He's a great guy. I'm friends with Ming Chen. So Ming tells me just incredible things about Kevin.
Well, and I remember just the original Clerks, mm-hmm. you know, the original Jay and Silent Bob.
Right.
And that whole, like, the movie is the movie, but the story of the movie is almost better than the movie itself, mm-hmm. about how that's the convenience store he worked at, and he got his boss to let him film there.
Right.
And he got all his buddies to,
you know. It was a pure film.
And, you know, it was well written and well shot and well choreographed with the you know, the dialogue and everything. And how many cultural, just pop culture references are buried in that film for people that maybe not have ever seen it.
Right.
But they know.
They know the references.
Yeah. Like, I'm not even supposed to be here and stuff like that. And, you know, and that whole convenience store culture is like that.
Yeah.
It's like the, you know, where he's getting pelted with cigarettes by people that are like, you know, cigarettes are bad for you. Like, you have no idea, dude. Like, working in promotions. I worked promotions for Camel Cigarettes. And I'd be at a bar, and, like, at the time, it was one of those things, like, I'm not allowed to approach you. Like, I can't walk up to you and be like, hey, dude.
Want some cigarettes?
It's more like, I'm here, and people would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, if you are a smoker and you would like to answer my survey, then I will.
But you can't
give you a sample. People would be like, cancer killed my dad, man. Like, how can you live with yourself? And it's like, whatever, dude, it's just a job. Like, whatever, go away. Like, well, I still want the cigarettes. And you're just like, are you freaking kidding me? No. Like, I need one more signature so I can go home for the night, but I'm not signing you up, asshole. You. Like, so yeah, customers suck. And Kevin Smith pointed that out more than just about anybody.
Right.
They also had a tribute to the Weekly World News in there, remember?
Yes, yes. It's a great all-around movie. And just him, he has a tremendous body of work that he's been involved in. Oh, okay. Even when it's just cameos that he's made in different movies and stuff, or small roles that he's had. Kevin Smith is Kevin Smith, man. I don't know if he...
I listen to his podcast, and the dude's hilarious.
For everyone out there, if you've never seen the video of him describing his weekend with Prince, it is one of the greatest stories you will ever hear. Have you ever heard
of it? I don't think so.
Dude, he actually did it before Prince died, but when Prince died, all of a sudden this video kind of came to light. But he's talking to this group of folks, and he's talking about the weekend Prince hired him to film a documentary.
Oh, I think I have.
It is so funny, and it's just, it is remarkable.
I need to check that out, because I have heard of that before. I don't think I've heard it.
It is a great, great clip.
Well, that's what I'm doing when I get home.
And that's it for new business.
It lives 50 feet beneath the streets. It weighs over 2,000 pounds. It's killed 5 people already. And it's about to break out. Alligator, rated R.
Starts Friday at theaters and drive-ins throughout Sacramento, Stockton, and Modesto.
All right, and we're back.
You know, that used to actually be one of my icebreakers with my engineers when we'd have meetings before we started a meeting, or if we needed to chill out for a little bit. I'd, have everybody around the room say what your theme song would be when you walk in the room. If you can have one song every time you walk in a room, what would you want it to be?
Probably everybody said the Imperial March. Dun, 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 dun.
Turn on meetings in the WWF wrestling matches.
Right. Mine would be the Prince. You don't have to be cool. Nice. They'd be like, what the hell's wrong with this guy? So tell me about some sea monsters, bro.
Sea monsters are pretty cool.
Not if they're pulling your boat now.
Well, of course, but the stories behind sea monsters are pretty cool. Sea monsters go way back, too. This is like just ancient stuff that we're talking about. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in the primordial soup. I told you I've been stuck on a philosophy podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if it's philosophy so much as it's just... It's perspectives on the concept of being. Like consciousness and being and mm-hmm. the human condition. And what we are in relation to the animals and the cosmos. And where mythology and God and the infinite all play into that stuff. And one of the things that he continues to speak about is... kind of the concept of how our awakening from walking in congress with nature, just like all the animals besides humans, they're not conscious. They don't, all they do is be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about it too hard. They don't, you know, all, you know, they get scared and they run. They don't, but they don't really have a concept of right or wrong. But all of our creation myths and all of these things that are pretty near universal for human beings is flood myths, snakes, sea monsters, lake monsters, mm-hmm. like the chaotic and the unknown that's down in the water.
Right.
And so things that can eat you that live in the water, they go back to all the way back to the beginning.
Right.
As something to be feared. And, well, you know, you'd say I don't believe in sea monsters until one takes a bite out of you. So, there's, you know, of all the things we talk about as far as fear goes, this one goes probably pretty deep as far as primordial fear.
Right.
Of serpents and alligators and basically predator reptiles.
Right.
That, and fish. That would just be happy to take a chunk out of your ass.
Well, back in the day, somebody takes off in a boat and they don't come back. You got to explain how they didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened to them? And, you know, it was the birth of the sea monster.
Well, yeah. And even if they didn't take off in a boat, you know, sharks swim close to shore.
Yeah.
Anacondas? Can you imagine... if you've never seen one of those things before?
I've seen it for the first time.
Well, seeing it take out your bro.
Well, yeah.
You know, he's taking out your...
some giant saltwater crocodile.
You're out there hunting, and some giant, like, 100-foot-long snake just comes out of the tree and, like, wraps him up and guzzles him down, and you're just like... and then swims off into the lake. You're like, what the hell was that? So let's start with sea monsters. Let's start with Kraken.
One of my favorites, mainly because of Clash of the Titans, of course, which the original Kraken mythos isn't exactly the same as the Kraken that you see in the movie itself, but the Kraken was pretty cool. It was pretty badass. Essentially, it's thought to be a colossal squid.
Which are extremely intelligent,
yeah.
As things go.
They know how to avoid people. Avoid things, avoid prey, and they know how to.
They
can kill.
Well, they're apex predators.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't. You look at a squid and kind of what it is, and it's just kind of this gooey thing outside of the water, but under the water, it's formidable. It swims extremely fast. It's got awesome eyesight. It's got a beak like a parrot.
Yeah.
Now, you think, okay, a beak like a parrot. Yeah, we'll take that beak.
Imagine
like
that
a parrot.
Imagine that 200.
Make it the size of a car.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was a kid, my dad's boss, we went over to his house for dinner, and they had a parrot. And his boss was like, "Don't touch the parrot, he'll bite." I'm like, "Okay, I'm okay." He goes, "Hey," and he picks up a flip-flop and he sticks it in the cage, and the parrot took a chunk out of that, and it's like inch-thick rubber.
Right.
And he just takes a chunk out of it, chews on it for a second, spits it out. He's like, "Now imagine that thing the size of a car."
Yeah.
And it's got 8 arms to hold you.
Yep, to pull you to that
to pull beak. You into the beak. It would not be a good way to go.
Oh, no.
Now, luckily, it might be quick. You know, only so many times you could get stabbed with a parrot beak the size of a car before you're toast. But
well, the Kraken are a colossal legendary sea monster said to dwell off the coast of Norway and Greenland. And actually, in 2012, some scientists discovered a giant squid that kind of corresponded to the physical description of the Kraken. Using deep sea exploration with special lighting displays, they were able to attract it to it, and they were able to get some pictures of it. The original legend may have originated from sightings of real giant squid that are variously estimated to grow to 13 to 30 meters, or 43 to 100 feet long. Including the tentacles, these creatures normally live at great depths, but have been sighted close to the surface and have reportedly attacked ships before. They are common creatures in Nordic myths. The sheer size and fearsome appearance attributed to the Kraken have made it a common ocean-dwelling monster in various fictional works. Kraken is one of the most, if not the most, largest cryptid that it may have ever existed, and is so far the only thing in the massive category. So they... A lot of tales of these things, and they, I love this. It could be possible the Kraken could have been early sightings of colossal squid. Kraken dung has been found on the shores by Vikings, but later proven to be amber. So they used to find these chunks of amber, and,
wow.
And they assumed it was the Kraken dropping a deuce.
Well, I remember reading years ago, I was obsessed with sea, you know, with sharks and whales and stuff of that nature. And I remember reading this. And I've seen it in a couple places since, but I remember getting up from my book and going into the kitchen and picking up a plate and looking at it and saying that the average, like, giant octopus, its tentacles, its suckers, get anywhere from, like, I think the largest they say was, like, an inch. An inch to an inch and a half in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
But they've found whales that had... sucker scars on their bodies the size of dinner plates and even larger.
Because they have hooks in them.
Right.
Yep.
Well, yeah, so whenever they clamp on, and then they tear off and they leave scarring on the side of the whale. So then you say, okay, well, if this octopus is, you know, this giant octopus, which I'm not even sure how big a giant octopus is, but if the biggest octopus is only, like, you know, got tentacle suckers that are an inch and a half big, then you put a dinner plate up in front of that and then expand the size of this. It's a substantial animal doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And how strong the whale must have been in order to break free from it.
Right.
But I believe that the Kraken exists. I don't have any reason to doubt that it exists.
Yeah.
They found... big squids, and they keep finding bigger ones, and
you know, this the unexplored earth is the deep sea.
Yep,
it's we don't know what's down there.
Absolutely.
Megatron was down there for a little while, then they woke him back up from the first movie.
They should have let him lie. They didn't change him back into a Walther.
No, that still doesn't make sense to me. But
he didn't need to be some kind of weird spaceship with, like, dangling balls in the back. Like,
since we brought up whales, we can bring up Leviathan, which is one of my favorite words.
All right.
Leviathan actually means whale in Hebrew. A legendary serpent referenced in Old Testament in Tanakh, the word became synonymous with any large sea monster or creature. The great whale was sometimes referred to as a Leviathan. It's a common thing in video games, movies, books about sea monsters. It's also been described as a dragon who lived over the sources of the deep, and who, along with the male land monster Behemoth, will be served up to the righteous at the end of time. But Leviathan is essentially just a giant, giant whale.
Well, Leviathan is a giant whale, and you can dismiss mythology all you want, but we've talked about what people would think of. If you're, if you realize that our human timeline, however it is, however long it is that we've been around, that we've had culture, that we've had written word, we've had science, that our concept of the scientific method and hypothesis, scientific method to theory, and on and on and on, it's only been around for a very short time, relatively. We were just talking about, in the history segment, about Copernicus, and last week about Galileo, and how there's a sort of permanence in our own concept of, like, immortality. Up until not too long ago, until basically Darwin, it was pretty much thought that everything sprung to life at the same time and lived concurrently. And that's fair enough. So, yeah, I've never personally seen a dinosaur, but there's a bunch of dinosaur bones, which lets me say that they're somewhere.
Right.
Now, they may all be dead, but at some point, somebody had to fight that dragon.
Yeah.
Well, then there's the Cadborosaurus, which it is a cryptid sea serpent in the folklore regions of the Pacific Coast, North America. It's name derived from Cadboro Bay in Greater Victoria, British Columbia. And the Greek root saurus means lizard or reptile. Cadborosaurus is said by witnesses to resemble a serpent, with vertical coils or humps in tandem behind the horse-like head and long neck, with a pair of small elevating front flippers. It has been sighted all over that Pacific Northwest, and thought to be ribbonfish, basking sharks, or sea lions.
Basking shark is used to try to...
They're huge.
But they used to try to... explain some of the unexplainable a lot.
Right. Now, there is a creature called a Basilosaurus, which for you guys, you need to look it up. But it was initially thought to be a lizard, but it turns out it's been proven to be a mammalian creature. It's 49 to 59 feet long. It resembles the monster in Jurassic World. That giant dinosaur that they had in the tank, but that was a lizard.
Mm-hmm.
That was a reptile. But essentially, it has this giant lizard, or not lizard. It looks like a crocodile's head, and it has a serpent's body with little flippers. But it turned out to be mammalian. 49 to 59 feet, carnivorous, with a bite radius, or not bite radius, but a bite estimated to be at 3,600 pounds per square inch.
Oh, wow.
Now, it's extinct, but imagine finding the bones of this thing, because it's mammalian, so there are bones. Right. They're deposited, and they're stuck in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Kind of sounds like the Cadborosaurus, actually. Right. So, that is not to say that they are one and the same. What it means to me is the Bagalosaurus. There are a lot of things that are extinct that have offspring, that have offshoots, that there are living
descendants
of. That the big one no longer exists, but you got smaller ones.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that's not discovered. But these two sound very similar. And again, I know I'm kind of bouncing page to page here. But to say that somebody is like, oh, hey, I saw this thing. And you're like, well, that's impossible. Something like that couldn't exist. Well, they've got several full skeletons of something that looks very similar to this thing. That, you know, maybe it just prefers that deep water. So,
well, one thing we can get to, which I know one of the more common prehistoric creatures that are used to explain some of the cryptids that we talk about are plesiosaurs.
Right.
There's actually a saltwater plesiosaur, too, that I found. whose name is Bobo. Bobo is a cryptid that dwells in the North Pacific Ocean, specifically near Monterey Bay, California. Descriptions of this animal vary greatly, and sightings of it are fairly common, actually. It is generally thought to be big, though the size attributed to it varies from that of an orca to that of a small whale. Although size discrepancies can be explained by sightings, the creature is also said to have wrinkly skin resembling that of an old man. And actually, in 1925, the rotting carcass of the so-called Monster of Monterey, believed to have been a plesiosaur, washed up on the shores of Moores Beach in Monterey Bay, California. His neck is said to have been almost 20 feet long. There's some pictures of it and everything. Biologists went out, maintained the remains were that of a basking shark, even though the evidence was inconclusive because it was decomposing. It was a decomposing body. While marine biologists have made tremendous strides towards revealing the secrets of the deep, unknown worlds remain locked away from humans' eyes at the bottom of the deepest oceans. So it's one of the many plesiosaurs in cryptozoology, which we know a lot of times we hear about the freshwater monsters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and basking sharks are frightening because they're very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
They're huge. And then you also have to remember that sharks have cartilage skeletons. So whenever if they wash up on shore, if they haven't been eaten, if they just die and they roll up on the land, they decompose quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And all of, like, the ribs and all of that stuff will compress and it'll kind of just shrink
down. It's all soft tissue.
So it'll look like a sea serpent.
Yep.
So it's possible that that's true. You know, you walk up to see something that's been dead for a couple weeks and then it's exposed to gravity, so to speak, it'll collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid, there was a book about sharks. And there's, and you can even look it up now if you see a bunch of shark catches. Like, they, back whenever they used to be allowed to catch great whites, you know, they'd have like 6 or 8 great whites on a boat, and once they get them on the boat, they collapse.
Yeah.
So their ribs,
they compress down,
and you have like a flat, you know, and the only thing that like holds them up is their jaws, because the jaws and the teeth are actual bone. The rest of it's not, but it'll flatten out from that torpedo shape.
Yeah.
Look kind of like a stingray almost.
Right.
So then you give that a little bit of sun and a little bit of turning in the surf. Get a couple birds chomping on it, making it not recognizable. Then that's plausible that that's what it is. They get blamed for a lot of things, though.
Yeah, they do. It's a quick go-to. While we're talking about sharks, you want to talk about the megalodon?
I do. I love the megalodon.
I figured you would.
Do you think megalodons still exist?
There are so many unexplored areas of the ocean. It is very possible. So I would say yes.
So the only reason I don't think that they still exist, I think they existed longer than maybe science has given them credit for, is because there's really nothing. If you look at the time in which they lived, there was analog prey. There was things that they could hunt that were that big that they could basically keep a thriving mating population without destroying the food chain. Whereas I think if you were to take a live megalodon now, like Jurassic Park style, like clone it and drop it in the water, it would very quickly screw up everything. Because for a megalodon's the size of a city bus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would eat sperm whales like left and right.
Just like a great white, it would just eat. Swim and eat.
It would just decimate entire populations of... But back when the megalodon was alive, pretty much everything in the sea was big too.
Yeah.
Things kind of got smaller as evolution progressed. So I think the great whites as a predator is probably about as big as...
Can sustain
a population. Mm. I also think that sharks, for as long as they've been around, if there was a large food source, like a big sustainable food source, they'd get bigger.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, it's like fish, and sharks are not necessarily this way, but they keep finding bigger and bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
Fish grow to their environment, and they grow to what they're...
Their food source
allows. So, whales get really, really big, but look at what they eat and how much of it they eat. They eat tons.
Yeah, they're constantly eating.
You know, so... But it is incredible to think, you know, that a great white shark the size of a city bus just swimming around, just not, you know, you imagine it being like this ravenous beast, but you watch most great whites swimming around just looking at stuff, just kind of coasting through the water. Imagine something that big, but like three or four times that size.
Right. And just for you guys out there, to give you an idea, if you're not familiar with the Megalodon, imagine a great white shark up to 80 foot long. Teeth at least 7 inches long, and a mouth that could expand to engulf an elephant. That's big.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to want to eat an elephant, like, every day.
Right. Well, sharks have nothing on this thing. And some people still believe they survived to this day.
Well, let's just put it like this. If they were to find a Megalodon and prove that it actually exists, or even that it died out, you know, 5 or 10,000 years ago instead of the millions of years that they say that it did, I wouldn't be all that surprised. And it's not because of pop culture, it's just because of the way that sharks are designed to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But megalodons are popular because the great white's popular.
Right.
There are other giant sharks that existed, but we don't have a whole lot of evidence for them because they don't have jaws and teeth.
Trying to see the last reported sighting
of a megalodon.
Yeah, of someone saying that they saw a megalodon was in. Let's see, that's that one in the 1960s. Captain of a 26-meter fishing boat reported seeing a huge shark. Like the previous sighting in Australia, he and his crew were very experienced, so it's argued that they would have known if it was a whale or not. The crew refused to say what they saw to reporters. However, the captain gave his account a few years later of this giant shark that they had seen. Prior to that, there was a recorded sighting in 1918. A fisherman off the coast of Australia refused to return to the ocean after he saw this thing. He was done. The massive shark demolished their gear and stole their pots. Their pots that they were using to fish with. When further questioned, they all reported similar things. A ghostly white shark as long as the wharf they were standing on. 115 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was in 1918. Before then, in 1875, two megalodon teeth were found. They were brought up during a deep sea exploration by the HMS Challenger. And apparently, according to the testing, these teeth were only 10,000 to 14,000 years old, which is about a million and a half years, you know, away from where it was supposed to have gone extinct. So it just shows that they may have more recently been in the oceans.
I would be remiss to think that they haven't been around longer than. That's another thing too that kind of gets me is like whenever you're talking about the physical sciences, when you're talking about a rock, for example, geology,
mm-hmm.
and you know, because you look at the Grand Canyon and you know that that was a river. So mm-hmm. whenever they find fossils in that river, they also can pretty much look and be like, okay, well, we can tell by the way erosion works and wind and rain and water and dating and everything, we can tell with pretty much good certainty how long ago this was actually a flowing river.
Right.
With the sea, though, you've got these marine biologists and sailors are superstitious. And I doubt there's a marine biologist alive today that went into the field because they thought snails were cool. Like, everybody loves sharks and whales.
Yeah.
Like, boom. And everybody is just entranced by sea monsters and cryptids. And I honestly think that if a field of science would be more forgiving to a date, it would almost have to be them, because they want it to exist.
Right.
They want it to happen. So they're going to study it that much harder.
To prove it right
rather, as opposed to proving it wrong. So that's another one of those things that makes me go, okay, well, if you've got all of these romantics out there doing their best they can to prove that it's real and they can't do it, then whenever it does show up, everybody's going to be so happy. Imagine what it would be if they like sent something down to the bottom of the Mariana Trench and found a Mariana Trench and found a fucking megalodon down there.
Right.
Be like, holy living.
Now, still on the subject of sharks, there's the Black Demon of Mexico. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but said to be an enormous black shark off the coast of Mexico's Baja California Peninsula. In recent times, local fishermen report seeing the black monstrosity, said to be 20 to 60 feet long and weighing anywhere between 50 to 100,000 pounds, which is a pretty big range there, but said to resemble a great white, but with very dark coloration and a truly monstrous tail. Some people say it could be a megalodon or a new species of shark, maybe even an oversized great white, because some people are thinking, you know, albinism can be found in sharks. Maybe melanism can be also. So essentially, it just may be a genetic freak where it has a shark with darker skin, just a big ass shark with darker skin. So that's another one that I found during my research. I thought was neat. That imagine is, a black great white.
That'd be horrifying. Wicked looking dude. That sounds like a G.I. Joe villain or something.
Yeah, I thought that one was pretty cool.
Can you imagine being in a cage when that thing come at you?
Because it's dark down there to begin with. You know, there's not really contrast until it's right on top of you. Make you shit, man.
You don't say. Man. Thanks, dude. I'll be haunting my dreams. Well, then you've got manta rays that... You know, they've been known to jump out of the water onto boats.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things do. Going back to the sharks for a second, you know, it's like there were so many things. I remember being a kid and reading in books saying that it's like, you know, well, history, like legend says that great whites, you know, like sharks will jump out of the water and take men off of boats. To be like, oh, that's just a myth. That doesn't happen. That, you know. But then there's YouTube videos where you can watch great whites jump into boats.
Right.
They're going after some kind of prey.
Yeah, they get the momentum. When they hit the water, they don't.
They fly up out of the water. They land in the boat. But once they land in the boat, they go absolutely apeshit. They're just flipping back and forth, back and forth, mm-hmm. back and forth. Mouth open.
Yeah, we pulled them up before. Trust
me. They're biting anything that they can get their hands on. And then they get up to the edge, and then they'll like throw their head over, and they'll jump out.
Get back in the water.
Now, can you imagine if you were standing there whenever it biting, took a chunk, and then threw its head over and took you with it? Can you imagine the letter home to that sailor's wife? Dear Mary Sue.
The shark jumped out the water.
And took your husband with him. Manta rays have been known to jump out of boats, and actually, like with whalers, they'll sink them because they're so big. They're
huge, yeah.
And they're just jumping. Like, they do like dolphins. They just hit the fall. You know, they get momentum going, and they'll jump out of the water and then jump, you know. They're just kind of flying around. And you fly them up in the air, and it lands on your skiff and just...
It covers it like a tarp and just drops it down.
Drops it in the water. And manta rays don't eat people. They're not really dangerous, but it would be dangerous if you had a 500-pound animal land on your boat. You know, he probably wouldn't be happy about it either. He'd probably thrash around and mess up your whole day. Well, and we talked about, you know, back to whales.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, everybody knows the story of Moby Dick,
right?
But we've talked about it on the story of the Essex, where that mad sperm whale
was after them.
Yeah.
Very aggressive.
Aggressively knocked their boat into the water and crushed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sailors come home, they're superstitious, but there's a lot of stuff that have happened that, you know, their story's true.
Right.
It might not necessarily be the way that they said it happened, but
something happened.
Something happened.
Yeah.
And so then, what's next on your list?
Okay, well, we'll get to this little topic, but mer people.
I was going to say mermaids.
One particular one that I have that I found some info about is the Runan Sha, which is an ugly, vicious mer person reported in the Caspian Sea. following the tradition of naming cryptids after their home, it is sometimes known as Casper. It's reported that having black or green hair that looks like seaweed, webbed feet and hands. It's very fat and has an enormous mouth. It's described as having a white color on its scaly skin. Runenshaw's behavior includes swimming with schools of fish, making deep throaty screams like a seal's, and is amphibious. He's attacked people. He's very aggressive. He's not a nice merperson.
Well, honestly, I don't think, other than Little Mermaid, there's not a whole lot of nice merperson.
No, because they don't want to be bothered.
Mm-mm. Prior to Hans Christian Andersen talking about the Little Mermaid, mer people were something not to be messed with.
Right.
That was the whole sirens.
Yeah, the sirens. They caused you to crash to the rocks because they didn't want you out there catching fish.
Right. And again, this is one of those things where I always have a kind of cynical mind, again, not towards scientists, because scientists, I don't know any scientists, and the ones that I have known in the past were pretty cool people, and they weren't really like gabble down on things. But you know, less science, but more like scientific thought, non-scientific people that just take science as gospel.
Mm-hmm.
They quote evolution. Evolution's a wonderful thing. But at some point, we crawled out of the ocean and became land creatures.
Right.
And then from crawling out of the ocean, we developed into whatever we are. There's a lot of stuff in the ocean that didn't crawl out that's pretty freaking smart. Dolphins are smart. Right. Whales are smart. Giant squids are very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks are smart. They've figured out how to, like, not necessarily train them, but stimulus response, they can get them to do things.
Yeah.
Not as consistently as dolphins, but they can train sharks to come for meals and mm-hmm. stuff. Or I guess not taming, but so much as I don't know what the word is, but anyway. Not saying that there's a species of people down there, but there could be intelligent things down there that are smart enough to stay away from us. You know?
And not be seen, to stay hidden, just like Bigfoot.
Right. And, you know, we never know. You know, we don't find them. Well, what if they bury their dead? What if they eat their dead?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of dead stuff that washes up on shore, but there's also a lot of dead stuff that doesn't wash up on shore.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. Like, to have something that's, like, humanistic that does it, it's probably a stretch. But to have something that resembles humans, to have a whale that developed long arms or something.
Extra appendages or something, yeah.
Then, I think that's very well within the realm of possibility.
Well, look at manatees.
Mm-hmm.
Manatees are a great example, which we actually, I was going to speak about some manatees. The Helena manatees, which are actually, this is interesting, but it is thought that there is a colony of manatees that live on an island off the coast of South Africa. And I think what happened is they made the freshwater manatees that just made the trek somewhere and ended up getting to this chain of islands where the waters, there's more pooling going on, it's not as rough a seas and everything. They're able to establish themselves in a colony. But these are reported as being behaving like seals, being semi-aquatic, being able to come up on land actually and go around. And saltwater manatees, I love manatees, dude. Me and my daughter went swimming with manatees when she was little in Mexico, and they are just majestic, incredible creatures, dude. They're like dogs. You know, they're very, very smart.
Well, even sea lions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you get them from a distance and they're profiled in a certain way, they don't necessarily look human, but they don't look aquatic either.
Right.
You know, they
right. look like they're supposed to be on land.
Yeah. And they're somewhere in between.
Where do you want to go next?
That finishes my list, really.
Okay, well, I got one for you, dude. You're going to love this one.
All right.
Okay, here's the artist rendition of Luska. Luska is half shark, half octopus.
Hmm.
Could you imagine that creeping up on you? Because you're not getting away from Luska. A cage isn't going to help you. Luska is a name given a sea monster reported from the Caribbean. It's been suggested by cryptozoologists that Luska is a gigantic octopus, far larger than the known giant octopuses of the genus Enterooctopus and giant squids. Legend also said that it was half shark and half octopus. Many reports are from the Blue Holes off Andros, an island in the Bahamas. The St. Augustine monster, which washed up in 1896 in Florida coast, is considered one of the better candidates for a possible Luska specimen, which was a giant octopus that ever washed up on the shore. Scientists dismiss the Luska as at most a large example of the giant squid. That's what they think. But yeah, that's a cool one. It is in the Bahamas. Like laid back, sipping on pina coladas during the day, bothered by people. He jumps in the water and attacks.
Well, you know, again, you've seen shark attacks in movies like Jaws, and there's some YouTube videos of people getting bit. Again, you don't think of squid so much. I think a lot of people, when they think of squid, they think of that picture of the Kraken wrapping its arms around a boat, and the worst that's going to happen is you're going to drown because your boat's gone. But the reality is, you've got that parrot beak.
And giant eyes that can find you.
Right. And they hunt, and they're fast. And if you've ever seen a squid, they move quickly through the water.
Yeah. Like they propel.
And they can stop on a dime and change direction. And if they're hunting, they're really, really fast. But you've got that cephalopod, you know, that you got that head, that torpedo head that swims backwards, but it's got that parrot beak. Mm-hmm. Once it grabs something, it's pulling it in. Can you imagine if a squid is attacking you on the surface and it starts chewing off your foot with that parrot beak, you're screaming. Everybody's gonna be like, he's being attacked by a shark.
Right.
You know, it's a shark attack. And then you see tentacles floating around. You're like,
wait, shark has tentacles.
That shark has tentacles.
Yeah, I can see where that could easily happen.
And then he's thrashing around and there's blood in the water, and then here comes the sharks. Because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like freaking Roombas for the ocean. They just come through and like clean it up.
But I am done.
Hey, that was a 2-beer episode. That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
So we got any final thoughts? What we got coming up? What's interesting? We got Frightmare Weekend coming up.
Frightmare Palooza is cranking up, which will be 2 weeks after Texas Frightmare Weekend. It'll be Labor Day weekend. I'm sorry, Memorial Day weekend. I'm in September already. That's about it.
We got to get cracking. We got some episodes to do.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Right on, guys. Well, if you like this, like and share it. Post it. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, you have no idea how much that helps. I'm sure you hear it from all of your podcasts. It takes all of 5 seconds to just click that star.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, dude, if you don't like us, give us a 2-star review. You know, but at least say why. Give us a review. And this is not.
Let us know you're listening.
I'm not whoring for reviews or anything. But even if you don't like what we're doing, but you're listening to us anyway, tell us what we can do better, because we've got pages and pages of notes, and we can always. We can always improve. We were talking about it before the show started. Like, hey, you know, last couple episodes, is there anything we could do better? What, you know, whatever. We know what we think we like. We know what we think you like. Let us know what you like.
Right.
And you want to hear more Alien? You want to hear more Friday the 13th? You want to hear more Thundercats? Just, you know, give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a thumb sideways and an explanation, and we'll get on it. Because we're not going anywhere. We're going to keep doing it. So, just give us a hand with that. And with that,
that's it. It's a wrap.
Stay scary.
Later.
have been wiped out by a wall of flames. Neither man nor his machines are able to stop this creature.